So we're on Daf. We're on Daf Kuf Dalet Amud Aleph. We started and finished the Mishnah, but we did not get to analyze the Gemara. And this Gemara is focused now on the Reisha of the Mishnah, which is called Bozkin Melach. And we were talking about spreading a coating of salt by breaking up larger pieces of salt into smaller pieces of salt, al-gabia kevesh. And this would allow the Kohanim to do the avoda. And one of the four avodos of the Kohen is called holachas hadam, so that at the foot of the Mizbeach, in the Azorah, he shechts the animal, the Kohen shechts the animal, he receives the dam, and then he carries the dam to the Mizbeach by going up the Kevesh. And even though Bozkin Melach would be something that's prohibited during the course of the week, would be something that's prohibited on Shabbos, in Medina, outside the Beis HaMikdash, so let's say, for example, if I had in my own backyard some sort of a roadway, a pathway that needed salt, and I would break up the salt and place it on the ground in order to make the ground more solid in such a way that people won't slip and fall if it rains and so forth. So that would be also in Medina, and we'll see why. That has to do with Meleches Boneh and Mashve Gumos, but in the case of Migdash, we have a principle called Ein Shvus B'Migdash. So let's begin the Gemara, which is here on Kuf Dalet Amud Aleph, about 12 lines down from the top. Rami Le Rav Ika Mi Parshanoya Le Rav. So Rami is going to present to Rava what seems like a contradiction between our Mishnah and another Braisa. The Braisa says the following. First, let's quote the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Bozkin melach al gabi akevesh b'shvil shelo yechliku, so that in order to make sure that no Kohen would slip on his way up to the Kevesh, we'd be allowed even on Shabbos to do this Bozkin Melach. And the implication of the Mishnah is clearly B'migdash in B'medina lo. The Mishnah certainly would prohibit this outside the Beis HaMikdash. And the reason why the Mishnah didn't even mention the fact that in Medina it's also to do this is because, although in the previous Mishnayos the Mishnah consistently contrasted Migdash with Medina, however, Lamaskana, our Mishnah is not is not going to make a distinction between Migdash and Medina. The only difference between Migdash and Medina is going to be a Metzius, as we'll soon see, not a Din. So when there's a halachic difference between whether we apply Shvus, like in Medina, we don't apply Shvus, we suspend the Shvus in Migdash, then the Mishnah will go ahead and set up that contrast. But if the difference between Migdash and Medina has to do with what we call a Metzius, just a reality, a situation and a scenario, then the Mishnah is not going to even bother addressing the din in Medina. But in any event, one thing is clear, that the Mishnah, at least by implication, is telling us that Medina it's us. Reminu, we have a braisa that contradicts this chotzer, shenis kalkala, b'meime gishomim. Let's say you have a courtyard, and because of the rains, it's very difficult to walk through the courtyards. Is mevi teven umeradeba? The Gemara doesn't distinguish between melach and teven. And in both cases, it should be either mutter or osur. And the braisa explicitly is mati in the case of teven. And the Gemara presumes that the same thing would apply to melach. And when you put the teven, the straw, down as a kind of a mattress almost, as a buffer zone, so to speak, between the feet of the person who's walking in the chatzar and the stone floor of the chatzar, then basically we have the same fear of what's called michzei kibona. It's like he's improving the karka, and it looks like bona. We'll get to more details as we go along, because he's mashvegumos and so forth and so on. So right now, in the context of Rav Ika, and his question that he raises to Rava, we have no rhyme or reason to distinguish between the melach in our Mishnah, which the Mishnah by implication prohibits in the case of Medina, and Teven in the Brisa, which the Brisa permits. So the Gemara answers, Shani Teven. There's a fundamental difference between Teven and Melach. Shiny Teven, Delo Mevatale. So that Teven, even after you step on it, you stomp on it, and it becomes somewhat, shall we say, repulsive or filthy, but nevertheless, you could still use it to make cement out of it, or even in some cases the animals will still eat the teven, and therefore lo mevatale, when he lays out this teven on top of the ground of the floor of the chatzer, he has no intention of leaving it there on a permanent basis, and therefore there is no violation of what's called mashve gumos. Means that if you have a surface of a ground that's called karka, and it has crevices and cracks in it, then a violation of the biblical malach of bona would be incurred if you fill in these cracks and smoothen the surface of the ground. But that only applies if you're doing it in a way that's obvious, that's, you know, the mice itself indicates that that's what you're doing. You're being mashve gumos. If, on the other hand, you're just covering over the gumos on a temporary basis to allow people to walk, but immediately afterwards you're going to take out that covering and you're going to remove it and make tit out of it or feed it to your animals, which is called lo mevatale, then that's not even asur on a derabanan level, even as a mechze kibona. And such a thing would be mutter whether you're in the Migdash or in Medina. But in the case of Melach, once it's used, you know, on the ground, in this case to protect the and make it safer to walk the ground of the Kevesh, at that point, you're not going to pick up the salt afterwards. The Drisas Raglayim, you know, the stomping on the Melach is going to absolutely ruin the Melach. He has no intention of removing the melach. He's going to leave it exactly where it is. And that's called being mevatel. In such a case, we have what looks like mashvegumos. And therefore, it's nechshav kibone. And a few questions that we're going to ask here are whether or not we're dealing with, in a case of mevatele, are we dealing with the melacha doraisa? And if we are, if it's real bona, because he's mashve gumos on a permanent basis, he doesn't intend to take the salt away, he has no use for the salt, therefore it should be also even in Migdash. So here, we're going to begin by presenting a line from one of the Rishonim, and I've mentioned this Rishon in the past. His name is Rabbeinu Yonason, and he has a very extensive commentary on Masechta Erevin, and he quotes and compares our Gemara to a Gemara Masechta Shabbos on Daf Ayin Gimel Amud Beis. The Gemara there says, "Hoysalo bebayis guma, if in his house he has a hole in the ground, some sort of a crevice, vitamima, which is otherwise in modern Hebrew would be sosma, so he completely closes this crevice, is the Gemara says, Chayav Mishum Meleches Boneh. Now again, when he says Chayiv Mishum Meleches Bona, we're not sure if he's talking about an Av Melacha Meleches Bona, is he talking about a Tolda Meleches Bona, but the language of the Gemara in Shabbos, which is being quoted here by Ben Yonason in our context, is Chayiv. Chayiv means that he's violating a Doraisa. However, what we have to know here is that in our case, we are not talking about a chiyuv mishum meleches bona. Rabbeinu Yonason is only setting up the background or the framework for the shvus derabbanan, because otherwise there's no way that our mission in the case of Melach would allow Bozkin even in the Beis HaMikdash, because although ain't shvus b'migdash, we're not going to be matir and melacha doraisa in the Mikdash. So the Rav Shulchan Aruch writes that here, in our case of Bozkin Melach, Eino Mashve Gumos Mamish, even though what's happening is there's wetness on the surface, the ground surface of the Kevesh, and he has to dry it up so that no Kohen would slip on it, but nevertheless, he's not really being mashve gumos, but nira ki ilu hu mashve pnei akarka. In other words, the tsuras hapu'ula is normally done on a karka that has gumos, and for the purpose of being mashve gumos. Again, he may or may not be mashve gumos in this case of the kevesh. And even if in the worst case scenario, I would grant you that there are gumos on the kevesh that are now going to be flattened out, even afilu tema hachi, he's not being miskaving to do so. Now, I don't know if the Shulchan Aruch Rav is pointing towards the sugya of Dovr Sheni Miskaven and Reb Shimon and so forth. I don't know. I can't tell you. He doesn't say so. But one thing I see clearly in the Rav Shulchan Aruch that he's working overtime to guarantee that we should not understand Rabbeinu Yonason in the wrong way and take him at a very superficial level, as if to say that in our Mishnah we're talking about an action which entails a violation of Meleches Bona Doraisa. That's not what Rabbeinu Yonason had in mind. Because in our case, although he may be possibly Mashve Gumos, but he may not be Mashve Gumos, and even Afilu Tim Saloma that he'll be Mashve Gumos, nevertheless, he doesn't have Kavana Lekach. His interest is not in flattening out, you know, they'll bring rollers, you know, to flatten out the Kevesh. What he's interested in is to make sure that there's no wetness on the slip, that he won't slip on. So he doesn't have Kavana to be Mashve Gumos, and therefore, this would not be a violation of a Doraisa. Now, you may ask, is it a psik resha? And I think the answer is that we don't know for sure that he's going to be mashve gumos. We don't even know that there are gumos. It may be likely that there are gumos, but it's not definite that there are gumos. So now let's look at the brice again in the case of Teven. In the case of Teven, we're talking about a different metzius entirely, in which he lays down the teven on the ground in the chotzer only on a temporary basis. He has no interest and he has no intention of leaving that teven permanently on the surface, on the ground of the courtyard. And therefore, in the absence of bittul, we're not talking about mashve gumos at all. There's no mashve gumos over here. It's mutter. Even midrabbanan, you might say, well, it looks like mashve gumos, right? There's a tzura sapu'ula that had he done this in another piece of karka with by laying down this teven, you might have said, well, that is mechse kibone. And grant me at least that it looks like bone. And it should be also midrabbanan mishum shvus outside the migdash, which is exactly the subject of the braisa, chotzer. But the answer is that there's not even a tzura sapu'ula of Meleches Mashve Gumos, because the kind of substance that you would add to being Mashve Gumos is a permanent substance that indicates that he's mavatale, and if he's mavatale, he's really changing the nature of the karka by getting rid of the gumos, but not in the case of Tevin. Tevin is a different tzuras ha'pu'ula. He's only laying, so to speak, a protection, a mat, on top of his chatzer, on the floor of his chatzer. That doesn't even cling, you know, it doesn't even, that's not even associated with moleches mashva gumos. And therefore it's mutter even in Medina. Okay, now let's try to think for a moment about the case in our Mishnah of Melach. The Gemara is telling us by implication that in the case of Melach, he intends to leave it there. But again, using the Rav Shulchan Aruch that we said before, it's not a violation of a Doraisa, because he's not in the least bit interested in being mashvik gumos, and therefore it's mutter in Migdash. But again, the premise is that he's going to leave the salt there, and we tried to explain that based on drisas raglayim. You know, after people, you know, stomp over the salt, they're not going to be able to use that salt for any other purposes. So omalei ravacha brei de ravel ravashi hai melech echidomi. When you talk about spreading this melach in the Migdash on top of the kevesh, what exactly are you talking about? Could he be mevatelit, or is he not being mevatelit? And the Gemara now is going to introduce another element in the equation, a totally different element in the equation. Now, as you know, the Kohanim and the Avodah were barefoot. And the reason for that is because their feet had to be in direct contact with the karka of the Azara. Any chatzitza between their feet and the karka of the Azara would nullify and undermine the avoda. Now, when he puts the salt onto the kevesh, then if you're assuming that, for example, lo mevatale, so then at least you have to grant me a different problem. And that's the problem of chatzitza. Let's take a look at the Gemara. Hechi dami. The Gemara says, I have a problem, bimanefshach. No matter how you slice the cake. E demevatle. If he's adding to the kevesh in a permanent way, which was the assumption of the previous teretz in the Gemara, is then we have another problem, and that's called Mosif Abinyan. So we'll come back to that in just a second. But I'm going to skip the pasuk. We're not sure Rashi doesn't have the gears of the pasuk. But anyway, V'idah lo kamavatle, and if he intends to take the salt back, so that means that he's going to clear off the salt. It's not going to be a permanent part of the kevesh. It's called havya chatzitza. In other words, no matter how you slice the cake, you're in trouble here. You're either in trouble because of Mosif Alabinya, which is Asur, or you're in trouble because of Chatzitza. So let's take each problem one by one. What is Mosif Alabinya? So the Girsa, which Rashi doesn't have, and I'm going to prove to you that Rashi doesn't have this Girsa, because Rashi raises a question based on a Gemara in Chulin, and the Gemara in Chulin actually quotes this pasuk that we're about to learn, so that if Rashi had our girsa, why would he stretch his arm out to Chulin? It's right here in our Gemara. So Rashi's going to try to prove I think I'm jumping ahead of myself. So let's see the pasuk that, if you have this girsa, is a pasuk in Divrei Hayomim. Hakol b'ksav miyad Hashem alai hiskil kol meleches hatavnis. And what's happening here in this pasuk is that there's a halacha called Tavnis HaMikdash. There's another halacha called Tavnis HaKelim, but now we're going to focus our attention on Tavnis HaMikdash. And the Torah is telling us in various nevuos, in various prophecies, exactly what the Tavnis HaMishkan, or HaMikdash, has to be. And it's got to be HaKol B'Ksav Miyad Hashem Olai Hiskil. Like, I'll give you an example. Midos HaMizbeach. Right? The Mizbeach is an essential part of the Mikdash. So there's a Tavnis of the Mizbeach. It has to be according to certain measurements. And the Nevi'im were given exactly the Tavnis HaMikdash. And that's a transmission from one Navi to the other. And we're not allowed to alter that Tavnis HaMikdash. Now, if we were to add to the Kevesh, the Gemara is arguing that that would be a violation of Tavnis HaMikdash. Again, only if it's Mevatle. In other words, if he is adding something to the Kevesh that's not within the plan, so to speak, and he's doing it on a permanent basis, then he is now, through his bittul, violating the Iser of Tavnis HaMikdash. Okay, now we get to Rashi. Rashi, D'Ramaskel Ka, says the following. That what's going on here in this Gemara of Tavnis HaMikdash is a problem that would exist not only on Shabbos, but for that matter, even on Chol. And Rashi says, based on a Gemara in Chulin, the Gemara speaks about the mitzvah of Kisei Adam in the Beis HaMikdash. This is the Gemara in Chulin, on Daf Pei Gimel on the Beis, which Rashi quotes. Is the Gemara says that Asur Lishpach Biazara Afar Lechasos Boas Adam Ulevatlo. Fascinating halacha. You have now, in a sense, a contrast or a collision between two mitzvahs. One mitzvah is Kisei Adam. Now, again, I'm not exactly sure why he'd be tempted to be mevatel the offer, but let's just assume he's going to leave the offer on the ground. You have to know more about Kisei Adam for that. That's the subject of the sugya in Chulin. And if he's intending to leave the offer on the ground on a permanent basis, which is called levatlo, and fulfill the mitzvah of Kisei Adam, he now has a conflict, says the Gemara, with a violation of Tavnis HaMishkan, that the halacha derived from the Pasuk V'Kol B'Ksav is that you cannot alter the Tavnis HaMikdash. And once he's being mevatel the offer on the ground of the Azara, in the case of Kisei Adam, then he is now in violation of Tavnis HaMikdash. So the Iser of being mefazer, whether it's Ofar in the case of the Gemara Chulin, in our case, Melach, a Dover Shemivatlo, if his intention is to leave it there on the Mikdash, this is not a Shabbos problem per se, says Rashi. Anyone who offers that interpretation, that what the Gemara is objecting to in Mevatle is a violation of Meleches Bone on Shabbos, he's making a big mistake. Because he's understanding, says Rashi, that this is only a Shabbos problem. This is not a Shabbos problem. The Gemara in Chulin, quoting this very same Pasuk, that some have the Girsa. Rashi apparently didn't have the Girsa. If Rashi had the Girsa, then he wouldn't have to stretch his arm out to the Gemara Chulin to quote the Gemara of HaKol B'Ksav. And HaKol B'Ksav is teaching us the Isser of making a change in the Tavnis HaMikdash. He could have slugged up this phantom Yesh Misha Perish, who learned that the Gemara's Mevatle is referring to an Isser of Melecha Shabbos Mishum Bona by just simply quoting our Gemara. I mean, Uksiv HaKol B'Ksav. Rashi says, no. You have to learn the Sugyan Chulin, and the Gemara there invokes the Posuk HaKol B'Ksav to establish the Isser of being Mosif and changing, therefore, the Tavnis HaMigdash in a case where he's Mevatle. Okay, so fine, Rashi doesn't have the Girsa, but in essence, the bottom line is that whether or not you have the Girsa of Ksiv HaKol B'Ksav or you don't, Rashi's telling you that the problem that the Gemara is raising here is not a Shabbos problem. It's not a question of Meleches Bona, it's a question of violating the Tavnis HaMigdash. So the Gemara says, "I delo kam avatle." And what are you going to tell me that he has no intention to be mevatalit? Which means that in order to avoid the violation of Tavnis HaMigdash, to live up to the requirement of Tavnis HaMigdash, he's going to clear off the salt. Let's say, again, I don't know exactly what's going to happen. Maybe on a daily basis, there'll be salt cleaners, right? Those who will have to clear off the salt. That's called lokam mevatle. So now the Kohen is climbing up the kevesh, stepping with his bare feet on the salt. That's not a good thing, because kahavi chatzitza. There's a wedge now between the under part of his feet of the kohanim and the kevesh itself, and that's going to passle his avoda. So the mefarshim quote a gemara in Zvachim to prove this, that there is a psul chatzitza that applies not only between the hands of the Kohen and the Kli Shareis. If you remember the sugya that we had about Gemi and about a Tzaltzul Katan, you know, when he wraps his hand with a wound, you know, with a Gemi or some sort of a sash, or some sort of a belt that he puts around his hand. So that's already one din of chatzitza, but the Gemara in Zvachim says that in addition to the chatzitza between his hand and the clay shares, there's another din of chatzitza that also undermines his avoda in the case where there's a chatzitza between his feet and the ground. So we're really in a bind now, and that's what Rav Acha is pointing out over here. If you're going to tell me these we mevatel it, then there's a violation of the Isser of Tavnis HaMigdash. If on the other hand he's not being mevatel it, then it's not part of the Kevesh itself, and now it forms a wedge, a separation between his feet and the Kevesh, and that's a problem of Chatzitza that should undermine his Avoda. So the entire enterprise now of salting the Kevesh for purposes of protecting the Kohanim is problematic. And honestly, I'm not sure, according to Rav Acha, what exactly, you know, it's funny because when the Gemara is asking a kasha, we have a braisa that contradicts our Mishnah, so then you try to reconcile the two. But in Rav Acha's case, his kasha is such that I don't know what recommendation he would have. You know, I would like to turn the question back to Rav Acha and ask Rav Acha, okay, so what do you suggest? You know, we have a wet kevesh. It's very slippery. What are you going to do with it? You know, you got to... So if you're going to... You know, if you're going to pour something over the kevesh, you know, put a blanket over the kevesh or a mat over the kevesh for protection, then it's going to become a chatzitza. And if you're not going to protect it, then the chas v'shalom, the Kohen is going to trip and break a leg, chas v'shalom. I don't know what's going to happen over here. So I don't know exactly, in Rav Acha's naive question, like, what did he have as a solution to the problem? Okay, but that's irrelevant, because whatever Rav Acha was thinking, he has to conceptually work out how the halacha could accept this process of salting the kevesh. He's willing to say, I can't argue against the Mishnah, The Mishnah certainly allows salting the kevesh, but I'd like to know how that's possible, you know, within the halachic principles that we have. So the Gemara says the following. You're right. He's not being mevatel. He's not being mevatel the melech to the kevesh. They're going to clear it off. And maybe they had another use, Rashi said, for the salt. You and I thought that salt becomes repulsive after drisas reglayim. Rashi has an eitza. Rashi says that they used the salt after they cleaned it off the kevesh for melichas oros kodshim, so that the or of behemas kodshim is mutter, meaning it's not, it doesn't have kedushas haguf lemizbeach, and therefore you can benefit from the oros, and they would use it for melicha. That was like a common kind of place. Maybe they had a certain lishka where they did the melichas haoros. In any event, they weren't mevatel the salt. Now, if they weren't mevatel the salt, and that's going to help solve the problem and circumvent what's called the shinui tavnis hamigdash, that's wonderful. But I don't know why then in Medina it should be, you know, it should be mutter. I'm sorry, I don't know why in Medina it's also, it should be mutter. Because, as we said before, in the case of Tevin, it's mutter because lo mevatale. But let's leave that question on the side. So the Gemara says, now, are you going to ask me, well, if he's not being mevatel the melach, okay, so there's no violation of Tavnis HaMikdash, but then you're asking me, it's a chatzitza. So the Gemara answers that our Mishnah, when it says that they would spread around the salt, it's beholochas evarim lekevesh. The lav avodahi. There were two different things that the Kohen would carry up the kevesh. One is dam, after the shechita, and the other is evarim. There are certain innards or fats of the carbon that had to be burnt on the mizbeach. That's called haktaras evarim upidorim. Now, how did the Kohen get access to the kevesh? To the mizbeach. He would have to walk up the kevesh. And now he's on the way to carry the evarim upidorim onto the Rosh HaMizbeach for the purpose of haktaras evarim ve'murim. And he goes up the kevesh. And the Gemara says, the lav avodahi. Now, what does that mean, lav avodahi? We say holocha is one of the four avodos. The Gemara is saying holocha is only one of the avodos in holocha sadam lizrik al gabi mizbeach, which is an essential critical part of the kapar of the karma. However, when it comes to avarim and pidarim, if let's say, for example, nitmu or nevdu, the karma would still be kosher, and therefore we don't define the holochas evarim lekevesh as an avoda, and therefore there's no psul of chatzitza, which is really interesting because I'm wondering, according to this sugya, what would be the status of a chatzitza b'shas shechita. Because shechita is a funny kind of a case. It's not really an avoda. It's kshera bizarre. So I don't know what would be the status of chatzitza in shechita. I'm sure there's a very straightforward gemara about this, but right now I don't know what that gemara says. So again, the gemara is now differentiating between holochas hadam lemizbeach and holochas ha'evarim lehaktara barosh hamizbeach. In the first case of dam, we're talking about something that is essential to the kapara, and it's therefore a full-fledged avoda. So the halach of the dam is one of the four avodos. You and I would have said that halach is just a technicality, which is actually a sheet, if I'm not mistaken, of Rab Shimon in the Mishnah in Zvachim. But we passing like the Chachamim that halacha is an essential avoda, has tremendous nafkaminas, because would it be ksheira bizarre? Would it be subject to a psul of machsheves pigul, chutzum zmano, chutzum koma, and all that stuff? In any event, chatzitza between the feet of the kohanim and the kevesh at the point of halachas adam is going to undermine the avoda of zrika, but not in the case of haktaras eivarim, because haktaras eivarim is not the same level of avoda, shall we say. Again, it's very hard to get gradations over here, but it doesn't have the same status as zrikas adam. So haktaras eivarim and zrikas adam are two different categories of avoda. And the nafkamina is going to be holacha, that if you're talking about holacha in the case of zrikas adam, then the holacha sadam is a full-fledged avoda with a psul of chatzitza. Whereas if you're talking about a lesser category of avoda, namely haktaras eivarim, which of course lechatchila is an absolute requirement, I mean, our tefillas arvis, for example, was established to replace haktaras eivarim, as it says the Mishnah, the first Mishnah in Shas. But nevertheless, it's a different kind of an avoda. It's an avoda that requires kohen, but the halacha is just a technicality. No, it's whatever's necessary to set up the haktaras haivarim is only a conduit, it's a means to an end, it's a preliminary, it's not an avoda per se, it doesn't require that the ragle hakohenim be in direct contact with the ritzpas hazor, or in this case with the kevesh. And it's not an avoda hamachaperes, because whereas zrikas adam generates the kapara, a haktaras eivarim does not generate kapara. And as I said before, even if the eivarim were to get lost, the karma would still be maratza, it would still be machap. So the Gemara is not happy with this. Velo, is this really true about halachas eivarim when he goes up to kevesh and it's not considered an avoda, only the actual haktara is the avoda? Vaksiv in the parasha of Ola at the beginning of Chumash Vayikra, it says Vakerev Akroayim Yirchatz Bamayim Vekriv Akohenas Akol Viktir Hamizbecha. And what does it mean, vehikriv? And you and I might have said that vehikriv is the actual haktara, but that can't be. Why? Because it says vehikriv viktir. So obviously vehikriv is different than viktir. Hiktir means when he takes the evarim and he places them on the eshal gavi mizbeach. So what's vehikriv? Omar mar. What does vikriv mean? Zu holachas eivarim lakevesh. That the Torah is now equating vikriv, which is holacha, with viktir, which is haktara. And just like haktara, as we said before, is a full-fledged avoda, it requires a kohen, so too the holacha requires a kohen, and it has the status of an avoda. And it's not just some sort of technical machshir or means to an end, a medium. It is inherently an avoda, and therefore the Gemara says that the psul chatzitza will apply to the kevesh even if he's only carrying the evarim up the kevesh. So now we're really in trouble again, because how are we going to allow salting the kevesh in a way that he's not violating the Tavnis HaMigdash, which means he's not Mevatalit. If it's not Mevatalit, it's not part of the Kevesh, and therefore it should form and serve as a Chatzitza. Elo Ema. What does it mean when our Mishnah says that you're allowed to spread the salt on the kevesh. It's not at the moment of halacha, neither halachas dam nor halachas ha'ivarim, but rather b'shas halachas eitzim l'maracha. There was a third material which had to be carried up from the azara to the top of the mizbech, and that were the eitzim in order to set up the fire. L'maracha. Oh, eitzim. The lav avodi, everybody agrees, and it's simple, that this is not an avoda. So, for example, if, let's say, a non-Kohen would carry up the eitzim and place them on the mizbeach for the maracha, that would be fine. And therefore, if holochas ha'eitzim is not an avoda, and you don't even need a Kohen, then there's no din of chatzitza haposeles. Now, just to give a little background here, based on the Rambam, at the beginning of Hilchus Tmidim Musafim, the Rambam writes that on a daily basis, boker, orchim eitzim b'rosh ha-mizbeach, they would set up the pyre, I guess you'd call it in English, on the top of the mizbeach. The orchim marocha gedola shel esh, and they had a very large bonfire. Shenemar, the Rambam quotes the pasuk, ubir oleh ha-kohen eitzim baboker baboker. Now the Rambam says that there's another mitzvah which is a little bit similar, and that's what's called gizrei eitzim, that has to do with the tomid shel shachar, and that has to do with the atzei amarocha. That's already a different mitzvah. But in any event, let's get back to our Gemara. The Gemara says that what it says in our Mishnah, that you're allowed to break up the salt and spread it over the kevesh, that's in a case where he, A, is not being mevatel the salt to the kevesh, he's going to clean it out afterwards, therefore there's no violation of hakol b'ksav. And even though he's not being mevatel it, which makes it a chatzitza between the ragli hakohen and the kevesh, nevertheless we're talking about a case of holochas ha'etzim, which is not navoda, and therefore there's no psul of chatzitza. Now we get back to our original question, which we ignored before, and that is, so why is it that in Medina, this is prohibited? Right? In Migdash, we said it's mutter. That's our Mishnah, but not in Medina. That was our diuk. Now, if he's not being mevatel the melach, then why is it any different than Teven, which we said that Teven on his chatzer is mutter even outside of the Migdash? Because since he's not being mevatel the Teven, he has full intention to take the Teven and feed his animals or whatever he's going to do with it. It's not mashve gumos. So why in our Mishnah is there a prohibition outside the Migdash of breaking down the salt and spreading it over the Kevesh, or for that matter, I should say, over a chatzer? It should be mutter even Medina, since he's not being mevatel. And again, our Mishnah must be talking about a case where he's not being mevatel, otherwise he would violate the Isur of Hakol B'Ksav by changing the Tavnis HaMikdash. So we, by definition, by default, we had to assume in our Mishnah that he's not being mevatel. What if he's not being mevatel? It should have the same status as Teven. And we said that in a Chatzer and his Kalkala, he's allowed to spread the Teven over the Chatzer because he's not being mevatel the Teven, and he's going to use it later on to feed his animals. So that's the problem that we face. So again, a million and one times I've quoted to you an achron called the Gaon Yaakov. And he writes the following. Hagemara somechet al hemsheikh divrei Rava. Rava, as we're going to soon see, is of the opinion that they were only matir to spread out the teven, the hay, and the straw over the chatzer when it got very wet and so forth and so on, only through a shinui. Because Rav, as we'll soon see, is of the opinion that even in a case where there's no bittul, and he intends fully to take away the tevet afterwards, there still is a tsuras mashvegumos. The action itself, forgetting about what his intention is, looks like mashvegumos, meaning if he would have had the intention in this case of being mashvegumos, the same action of lishtoach tevet b'chatzish and his kalkula would have constituted a violation of meleches bona. Right? It would have been mashvegumos. So the outer pu'ula is identical, and if we isolate or neutralize the kavana factor here, then he's actually being mashvegumos. And therefore, Rav insists that we're only going to allow this with a shinui. Ah, now we begin to understand the difference between our Mishnah and the Braisa of Chatzish and Iskalkala in the case where he spreads the Tevin. Our Braisa is talking about a case where we're going to be matir Bezikas HaMelach even without a Shinui. Now if Rav insists that Shtichas Tevin over a chotzesh and iskalkula is michsei kibona, and the only heter for it is going to be if you do it with a shinui, then why is it that in our Mishnah of bezikas melach, we're going to allow this even kidarko without a shinui? And the answer is because our Mishnah is talking about migdash, and the braisa of shtichas teven, which requires, as Rav is going to say momentarily, a shinui, that's talking about Medina. Now, just a comment of my own here. This is a brilliant presentation, an insight of the Gaon Yaakov, but it does leave us a little bit hanging here. I mean, the Gemara originally started this whole sugya with Rav Ika, who had a stira between our Mishnah and the Braisa, and Rava's name with regard to Tevin and Shinui and that requirement is not even mentioned here. And the Gaon Yaakov is saying that our sugya here somehow relies on a chiddush of Rava, which we haven't even presented yet. It's very strange. So the Gaon Yaakov says the following: V'Rav Ika shehiksha v'lo chilek kein. I mean, if this statement of Rava hashtochas tevin is only muta b'shinui. I mean, did Rav Ika know about that? If Rav Ika knew about that, then he should have come up with the answer of this contradiction on his own. He didn't come up with that answer. So he says, Mishum shedigdek mistimas divrei abraisa. The Braisa says that chotzesh and iskalkala b'meg shamim mevi tevin umeradeh ba, which sounds like he's allowed to be mefazer the Tevin in all cases, unqualified. There was no qualification here mentioned that he needs a shinui, implying that even in Medina, he's allowed to do this in his chotzer on Shabbos with the Tevin, and he doesn't require a shinui at all. So he wasn't happy with that. But now that we have Rava, who is going to overcome that inhibition, and he's going to say no, when the Bryce allowed a meradada shotcha tevin, it was only with a shinui. Now we have an answer to the question of Rav Ika, and we have a reconciliation between our Mishnah and the Braisa. Our Mishnah doesn't require shinui. The original answer that we tried to suggest was that maybe in the case of Melach there was bittul, but the Gemara rejects that based on the statement of Rav Acha, and the pasuk in Divrei Hayomim of Hakol B'Ksav. So it can't be that he had kavanah to be mevatel, and if he did not have kavanah to be mevatel, why does the Mishnah imply that in Medina would be asur? And the answer is going to be because our Mishnah is going to tell us that ein shvus b'migdash, we don't even require the shinui that we would normally require, even in a case where his intention is not to be mevatel it. Rava says, Fundesvegan, nevertheless you need and you require shinui. But in our Mishnah, since we're talking about Migdash, Rava would admit that we don't need a shinui. Now, the last thing that we want to mention here before we start the sugya of Rava is an insight here of the Ravid that is quoted by the Rikorkus. I don't know if you're familiar with the Rikorkus. He was one of the Megurashei Sfarad. He, together with the Abarbanel and 75,000 other Jews, you know, was exiled, and they refused to capitulate with the Inquisition and so forth and so on. He was one of those exiles. So he lived about 5.5 centuries ago. And it's very interesting because he had access to Rishonim that we don't have. So he quotes the Ravid in his commentary on the Rambam. The Rikorkus wrote a commentary on the Rambam. I remember when I learned Masechta Peah, we couldn't budge without the Rikorkus. Anyway, so he quotes the Ravid. The Ravid says the following, that in Migdash, the reason why they were matir bezikas melach, and they didn't even require a shinui, is because it was built into the equation, so to speak, that they would not be mevatel the melach. And why was that? Because of the pasuk hakol b'ksav. So adding anything to the floor of, in this case, the kevesh, was only done on a temporary basis. It couldn't have been otherwise. And that was guaranteed from the get-go. Because once they would be mevatel it to the ground of the kevesh, it would automatically, ipso facto, be a violation of Hakol B'Ksav. So the Hakol B'Ksav, in a certain sense, is like a fence that guarantees that they would never come to do it in a way of bittul. Masha Ein Kein, B'Medina, once we leave the confines of the Migdash, where there's no Iser of Hakol B'Ksav, they could certainly be Mevatel the Melach. And therefore, Rava says that in all such cases, we always have to be choshesh, that maybe he'll come to be mevatel, and therefore he will violate the iser of nireh mikseh kibboneh. So therefore, in the case of Medina, they're going to aser this melach because of the fear that he might come to be mevatel. Now, says the Ravid, let's look at the Braisa. The Braisa says that Chotzesh and Iskalkal Abimeik Shavim Mevi Teven Umerade Ba. Says the Ravid, you know why in this case they would allow it even in the Medina? Because since it's royal Amachal Behema Ulitit, that in itself will guarantee that he won't be Mevatel. So that Melach, according to the Ravid, he doesn't have this business of Meshichas Oros and all that stuff, right? Of salting the skins, the hides. So the Ravid says, what's he going to do with this Melach? In all likelihood, he'll be Mevatel it, because once it's put down and laid down on the ground, after stomping on it, what is he going to do? He's going to put it on his table? It's repulsive. Narvas, in the Migdash, we're going to say that he certainly won't be mevatel it. And that's because of Hakol B'Ksav. But outside the Migdash, he might very well be mevatel it. He probably will be mevatel it. And therefore, we cannot allow that in Medina. But in the case of Teven, where we know that he has vested interest on a financial basis to clear off the Teven, once people have used the Chotzer, and then he's going to use the Teven either to make tit or to feed his animals, now we have a serious issue of his being mevatel it, which would incur an Isa of Mechse Kibbona. Again, we said in the name of the Rav Shulchan Aruch, that's not a Doraisa, but nevertheless, it's a Shvus, and it has to be also in Medina. That's the Raivin. Darash Rava, we'll try to just get a taste of the new Sugi of Rava. Chatzesh and Iskalko Meek Shomi Mevi Temen Umerada Radaba Amalei Rav Papala Rava Vatanya Shumerada Eno Merada Lo Be, I'm going to add a word of Lo Beshficha Misal Velo Beshficha Mikupa El Beshule Kupa, which means that Rav Papa quoted another brisa that says that the only way we could allow you to spread out the tevin over the floor of the ground of your courtyard is if you do it with a shinui. And he gives a couple of options in this brisa of shinui by avoiding a sal. Normally they would put the tevin into a basket and then pour the tevin from the basket onto the ground. That's not going to be permitted. Velo bekupa, otherwise they would use some sort of a basket, not a basket per se, but maybe some sort of a carton. And that's the way they did it during the chol. But on Shabbos, we're going to only allow you bishule kupa, which means that if, let's say, you have some sort of a basket and the wall, the outer tefanos of this kupa or of this sal broke down, so all you have is the bottom part, and now you're going to be mafaza the tevin from this broken kind of a basket. That's a shinui. That's going to remind him that he shouldn't be mashve gumos. So that Rav Papa is telling Rava, don't just go public with this brisa that says, in order to avoid the slippery nature of making shamim on your chatzit, bring tevin and just, spread it around the chatzer. No. Says Rav Papa, you should know that you should not, Rava, publicize that, because the brisa qualifies it very severely and requires a shinui, because otherwise we're afraid that'll be mashve gumos. And here's where the Gaon Yaakov comes up with his chiddush, that based on this limitation that only requires shinui, we now understand that our mission in the case of Migdash is matir, simply because ein shvus b'migdash, and it doesn't even require a shinui, whereas in Medina we require a shinui. Hadar Okim Rav Amorella, when he heard about this brisa from Rav Papa brought this brisa to his attention, then he got an Amora. The Amora was like the foghorn, that would expand the volume so that everybody would hear this. Vidarash, and he told he fed the Amora the following sentence. Dvarim she amarti lifneichem tos heim biyodi. I made a mistake when I told you you're allowed to go out on a rainy day of Shabbos and spread, your tevin over the courtyard without doing a shinui. I made a big mistake. Varam kach omru mishum Rabbi Eliezer, shumerada, eno merada lo besal lo bekupa ela beshule kupa. And he quotes Rabbi Eliezer again. It's a little bit strange because the brisa that Rav Papa had just quoted was a stam brisa, so I don't know exactly where Rabbi Eliezer came out of. But in any event, Rabbi Eliezer says that you need a shinui in order to be matir what we call shtichas hateven al gabi chotzer she niskal. So just to summarize, it's the Gemara here, the sugya starts with Darash Rava. So Rava gave a drasha, and his drasha was based on the brisa that we had quoted earlier that was matir the shtichas teven over the chotzer she niskal, and the brisa did not qualify it by requiring any sort of a shinui. So Rava rightfully assumed that no shinui was required. So that's the drasha he gave. But apparently Rav Papa waited till the drasha was over, and then he pointed out to Rava that this was not a simple matter. Now, the Rambam in Perkhof Aleph Milchus Shabbos says that there's no chash mitzad the tevin, because
the tevet is not being mevatel min astam. He has other uses for it. V'im eno mevatel embo mishum mashviyei gumos elachashashu shem yovel lahashvos esagumos bechol v'chayotzei ba. In other words, he'll use some sort of other substance once he's involved here, and he'll be mashve gumos. And the Levush says, mashma she'enach shash shema yovo lahashvos gumos el shelo yase ke'uvdon dechol. We're afraid he might be violating uvdon dechol. Okay, then, so Mirza Shem, tomorrow here on the bottom of Kuf Dalid, we'll pick it up from Mimalin Mibar Hagola, which is four lines up before the wide lines.